Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, May 30th, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw. Monday's Raw was in Greenville, South Carolina at Bon Secours Wellness Arena. It was the Memorial Day edition of WWE Raw, and I figured, hey, good time. Everybody's got to go back to work following the long three-day weekend, so why not set you guys up with some audio here on the all-access side of things. A quick note for members, the Q&A audio show normally recorded on Mondays will actually be recorded on Tuesday. Maybe Wednesday at the very latest, but I think Tuesday is the plan. So you can do the usual, submit your questions in the members forum, and look for that sometime, most likely on Tuesday. And another heads up for everybody that ProWrestling.net Live will return next Monday. We are live the Mondays after WWE pay-per-view events. Usually Will Pruitt and I haven't checked with Will to see if this one is going to work for him or not. But either way, I will be on with a co-host taking your phone calls coming out of the Extreme Rules event. And you can join us at 3 Central, 4 Eastern at pwaudio.net. If you can't call during the show, but you have questions, I will shoot you. You can email them to dotnetjason@gmail.com. dotnetjason@gmail.com. But again, Mondays, 3 Central, 4 Eastern time. As for Raw, this was the go-home show for Extreme Rules, and kind of a mixed bag. There was a lot of wrestling on the show, so if you're somebody who really likes a competitive main event, and even more than that, I mean, we had a triple threat match, we had a six-man tag opener, so a lot of in-ring action on the show. You may have came away satisfied. The storytelling feels a little flawed to me. The hype for making this, as far as like making Extreme Rules feel like a must-see show, just really wasn't there for me either. But you know, we'll work our way through it and kind of take it segment by segment to get a better feel for this show. It was the Memorial Day edition, and so they have their annual video package. WWE always doing a top-notch job with the video production. The live crowd chanted USA coming out of the video package as they showed different shots from around the arena. And then we got the Raw opening, the broadcast team, Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Booker T. And JoJo was the ring announcer. How long is David Otunga's movie shoot? Has it been 6 weeks yet? Just kind of weird. I don't even think they're mentioning him at this point. Big pyro display on the stage. Ms. Maurice came out. They were going to host a talk show segment. And this was Ms.'s chance to boast about the Extreme Rules match that he's having with Dean Ambrose. It's not an Extreme Rules match. It's a match at the Extreme Rules show, I should clarify. The stipulation for this, oddly enough, is that if Ambrose is disqualified, he will lose the championship. So Miz can become champion if Ambrose is DQ'd. He showed the footage of the way he cost Ambrose a match by DQ against the Drifter last week. And then he introduced Sheamus and Cesaro as his guests. And all of this led to, Sheamus and Cesaro didn't say a whole lot. Dean Ambrose ended up coming out to interrupt things. And, the heels were kind of goading him with the numbers advantage they had. And he said he might be crazy, but he's not stupid. And out came the Hardys. And then the Hardys and Ambrose all kind of bounced together at ringside and then entered the ring and were brawling. Cole pointing out that Miz took a quick powder to get out of there. The babyfaces were standing tall going into the commercial break. Good hype with Miz kind of setting the stage for the stipulation of his match with Ambrose going into the pay-per-view. I didn't feel like this was, there was nothing about that portion of it that was really good hype for the tag title match, which is the cage match at Extreme Rules. That was kind of forgotten in a weird way on this show. When they came back, we did get the expected six-man tag match. It was joined in progress. They said Kurt Angle booked the match during the commercial break. In the opening match, it was Dean Ambrose, Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy defeating Miz, Sheamus, and Cesaro. 12 minutes and 20 seconds of television time, because again, it started during the break. There was a little bit of clunkiness to the match, which I pointed out in my review, but it didn't seem like the live crowd cared. They were into the babyfaces. They definitely enjoyed booing the Miz for sure, and were into the action. Where I feel like they just kind of lost me when it came to there's a cage match on Sunday. That would have felt like now's the time to put Sheamus and Cesaro over somehow in this match to give the heels some heat going into the pay-per-view, something. and there wasn't anything. It just was Ambrose Hardy and Ambrose, Matt, and Jeff going over. Matt hit a second twist of fate on Miz, and then Jeff went up top and hit a swanton for the win. And so just yeah, no real heat put on the heels. And even at this point, I was being optimistic, like, well, you know, it's still early in the show. Let's see what they do. I had to stop and think for a second. I'm sure the broadcast team talked about it, and I tend to space them out inadvertently. So maybe they did mention it, and I just missed it. But yeah, there just didn't seem to be that big hype for a cage match. I mean, Extreme Rules, you're going to get a lot of gimmicky matches and things, and I'm not a big fan of the format for that reason. I just kind of like when you build to certain things. But when you're going to do a cage match, we make a big fuss over it. Come on. This isn't a kendo stick match, you know, kendo stick on a pole. This is a cage match, and it just kind of feels like an afterthought. It's unfortunate. From there, we went to the broadcast team talking about the match. Corey Graves was texting on his phone, so he was basically in Jeremy Borash mode from the early run of the Borash and company, Borash, Josh Matthews, and the Pope Impact broadcasts when Dutch Mantel and Jeff Jarrett kind of took over the creative end of that, because he was the guy kind of doing the almost like a, I compare him to like an NFL reporter. You know, he's always on the phone trying to keep an eye on what's going on, that sort of thing. Borash was doing that bit, and so that's what it reminded me of when Graves did it. And Graves ended up apologizing when Cole threw it to him for some generic talk and he wasn't paying attention, and he got up and he left the table. He's like, okay, that's interesting. Where's this going? And then they ended up doing some more hype. They went to a commercial break. They came back, and when they did, Kurt Angle was shown staring at a phone backstage. Turns out the cameras pulled back. It was Corey Graves' phone. And Angle read something about how this could besmirch his status as a gold medalist and blah, blah, blah. And then he asked how Graves got the message. And Graves just said, you know, I don't know. People like to tell me things. And he said he likes what Angle's been doing as a general manager, and he would help him out in any way he could. And Angle said, if this is true, it could ruin me. Okay. You know, it's like, all right, step one, we'll find out more as the show goes on. No. It was like, okay, that's it. That's all we got. And yeah, I mean, it kept me intrigued, but by the time when we got through, you know, it's not like they don't have a lot of time to work with. This is a 3-hour show, and I know naturally you're not going to want to give everything away in one episode, but it did kind of feel like, well, why not do this a little bit later in the show? And maybe it's just because the third hour is like, the viewership numbers are so down, but still, it just kind of felt uneventful, and it may have tied in to what they did with Big Cass and Enzo Amore and the Revival and all of that. But I don't know. The whole thing was just kind of weird. I don't know what would ruin Kurt Angle. He didn't seem like he was feeling guilty about whatever he saw. Like he did. I mean, he said, "If it's true, this could ruin me." Like, if it's true, well, if it's going to ruin you, shouldn't he know that it's if it's true or not? I guess I don't know. We'll have to wait and see it unfold. We had the Drifter sit in the ring and play his guitar and sing a song. No, it wasn't the mega heat that it was in NXT or even last week. The crowd, I think, is kind of sitting there listening to hear what he will say. And so it's, you know, I've said before, I like the guitar strumming Samson. I don't need the song. But I think they look at it as, well, it's easy heat. Yeah, but it really wasn't here. So, you know, it's one crowd. I'm not going to overanalyze that. But he beat a guy named Zach Evans in 240. Just a complete and total squash match. Completely one-sided. And good move. Because, yeah, we saw him work. We saw the Drifter work with Dean Ambrose last week. We got to see a little bit of what he can do. But without him establishing, okay, what's his finisher? You know, what's his setup moves? You know, what does this guy do? And so that's why I think the squash match for a newcomer like this to the main roster is important. And, you know, just this gave people a chance to go, okay, he performs a swinging neck breaker for the finish. And you just kind of get to know a little bit about what he does in the ring. And so I think it's an important step. I was happy to see this. And I know some of you are going, yeah, but we saw this in NXT. All right, but there's still a casual WWE viewer who isn't watching NXT, and you have to show them this killed 2 minutes and 40 seconds of your life that you'll never get back. I'm sorry for that, but it is important to show that to show the entire WWE crowd what this guy's moveset is. They had Cole and Booker recapping the match, and then Graves returned, and he said that whatever he and Angle were talking about was private. And Cole hyped the triple threat match, while a graphic listed it as coming up next. And then multiple times on this show, Lucha Underground ads, not uncommon, because now it may vary depending on what you have. I have DirecTV, so if you know have a different satellite or cable service, I don't know if you end up getting these. I think it's more of a local buy. I could be wrong. I'm not sure, but yeah, I mean they've been doing this for quite some time for their shows in the past. This is the first one for the new season, and it's been pretty quiet. I know they've done a little, an interview here and there, but this hasn't been El Rey Network going all out, it seems, as they've done in the past to kind of spread the word about a. This isn't this isn't like a season premiere. It's like a mid-season premiere kind of a thing. But hey, somebody spent some money on the advertising during Raw, so yeah, they're getting the word out that way. And I would assume that John Moore will be by with his. He won't have a live coverage review of Lucha Underground. That's usually something that'll be available Thursday mornings, if history is any indication. And John also handles the audio for the Lucha Underground television show, so be on the lookout for that. But yeah, Wednesday night it returns on El Rey Network. From there, we went to a we got a weird sponsor plug for the Money in the Bank sponsor. Like, okay, on Raw. I mean, I'm not a big, it's like something like that. I go ahead and break your rules to cross promote the shows, but it's like, shouldn't this be for the Extreme Rules sponsor? Anyway, Samoa Joe was shown watching footage. It looked like he was watching Balor's entrance. What he indicated was that he was actually watching Balor's 24 special, learning from it, and he said that he broke Balor before, he will do so again. Bray Wyatt's video flash, so he interrupted Joe with the promo from a different location, talking about how he's the devil that Joe doesn't know. And Joe was shown watching the promo on the same monitor that he was watching Balor, and Wyatt said Joe and Balor can give into their fears and run. So just kind of setting up the triple threat match. Then Balor came out for the triple threat. We got a commercial. We ended up with a portion of Samoa Joe's entrance, and then Bray Wyatt's entrance was fully televised. And in that triple threat match, it was Samoa Joe defeating Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor in a triple threat in 1650. And it's a good thing he did, because Joe looked pretty gullible again. Keep in mind that, it was Bray Wyatt who hit him with Sister Abigail when they were in the ring together before, and it looked like they were going to team up. Well, they teamed up again during this match, and once again, it was Wyatt. Kind of, first time it wasn't a big deal. This time it kind of made him look a little gullible that he fell for it again. But he ended up getting the win. What happened was that Balor had performed a running drop kick in his coup de grace finisher, and then but Joe, who was outside the ring, ran in and ran Balor through the ropes into the post, and then covered Bray Wyatt for the win. So Samoa Joe goes over. As far as what I read into this for Sunday, I mean, history tends to suggest that. It's not the person with momentum. So, I mean, hey, they can do what they want here, but when I see Samoa Joe win here, and I see Roman Reigns win as he did later in the night, it just kind of makes me assume that neither guy is winning. Now, that said, they may look at it like, well, we need to develop some sort of momentum. My pick right now for this, by the way, and I'm looking forward to hearing from some other opinions on this, but I think it has to be Finn Balor. Winning, just and I say that only because of the way Paul Heyman built him up, and I thought it might be something where there's going to be some creative push for somebody else. But if you recall, Heyman was just, everyone else is a victim, but for some reason he saw Balor as the threat to Brock Lesnar. He knew that Balor saw Lesnar as his victim, and we haven't really had anything like that. So that kind of makes me assume it's going to be Balor. Yeah, could be. I could be completely wrong, but that's my guess on this. But Joe goes over, and Balor, by the way, and they did a good job in this of starting off where Wyatt was kind of avoiding the situation, and then Joe would throw him in the ring, and then the two of them ended up working together for a while, Balor fighting them off, but of course the numbers game got to him. So they managed to keep this interesting for 16 minutes and 50 seconds. Then Mike Rome interviewed Seth Rollins backstage, and he talked about his complicated history with Roman Reigns, and he said they have wars because they want to be the best, but he owns Roman and will be sending a message to him and everyone else in that five-way match later in the show. So that was the line to remember, because that's the one that pissed off the Roman Reigns character. Then we had a shot of Sasha Banks and Rich Swann backstage, And we got some hype for their mixed tag match. They would face, or they will end up facing, Alicia Fox and Noam Dar coming up on Sunday. And then when they came back from a break in the fourth match, it was Rich Swann pinning Noam Dar in 250. Sasha was in Swann's corner. She prevented Alicia Fox from getting involved, and Swann won because of that. And then Swann danced, and he encouraged Sasha to do the same. And yeah, so we got the baby faces winning. We got their celebration. Why do we need to have this match when the heels are kind of the underdogs compared to the other? I mean, it's a little. I think Dar and Swann have probably traded some wins. I think everyone in 205 Live trades wins, but it's and Fox lately, she got one pin over Sasha, but it feels like Sasha's the biggest star of the bunch, and we just saw her win. I mean, maybe it's a sign they intend to have the heels go over. I don't know, but I just kind of felt like this show needed a little more heat put on some of the heels going into the pay-per-view. Instead, they just kind of took a, in this case, the case of the opening match, just kind of the happy, feel-good finish of the baby faces winning. Then we ended up with Charlie Caruso interviewing Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder backstage. So the Revival back on Raw for the first time since Dash suffered the broken jaw. Dawson had him show off that he had his mouth wired shut. He said those wires will be cut soon. Now, the idea here was that they were denying that they were around last week when Enzo Amore was attacked, but she had footage. She was interviewing. Oh, who was she interviewing? She was interviewing someone. I can't find it here. But yeah, she was interviewing somebody, and then in the background, I guess it was Sasha Banks, and in the background, you could see Dawson and Wilder walking in the distance, and so it proved they were there. And Dawson said, "And Enzo is a bottom feeder, and they don't waste their time with people like him." Then we had the broadcast team talking about this angle, and Cole said he hopes that Kurt Angle had a chance to see the footage. Graves said he knows Big Cass has seen the footage, and it didn't. It was weird because that's basically all he said. It wasn't like a sarcastic, snotty comment or anything. I didn't take it that way, but Booker's like, "What do you mean? And please elaborate," or something like that. And Cole just kind of said, he let him off the hook. It's saying what Graves couldn't talk about or something like that, and they end up just kind of going to footage of Akira Tozawa defeating Brian Kendrick on 205 Live in a street fight from last week, and so it's like, all right, Booker's the kind of getting all fired up about nothing, it seemed like. Well, then Big Cass shows up at the broadcast team set, and he confronts Corey Graves. I'm like, what? Now he's pissed. He asked Graves if he was insinuating that he had something to do with the attack on someone he considers to be his little brother. Graves said he knows that Angle is investigating, and he said he knows Cass will be doing the same as well. And so he's kind of backtracking here, showing a little fear for Cass. Big Cass ended up shaking Graves' hand and then walking away. At this point, I'm just completely lost. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. I mean, is there a chance they're going to turn Big Cass and get him away from Enzo? Sure. Could it just as easily be the Revival did this and they're trying to frame Big Cass or something? Yeah. How does this play into the whole thing with Kurt Angle? Not a freaking clue. I have no idea. It doesn't really, the way that was set up. So I don't know if they're two different things. I don't know if we're supposed to know that they're combined. The whole thing is just lost. As far as I lost on me. Then we went to Cole hyping the main event. And we had SmackDown ad. It'll be that five-way elimination match to determine the number one contender to the SmackDown Women's Championship. Be sure to join Jake Barnett for live coverage of SmackDown as the show airs on USA Network on Tuesday. And then in the fifth match, it was Titus O'Neil who had Apollo Crews in his corner defeating Kalisto in 50 seconds. He did so with a handful of Kalisto's tights, so he wins that way. And Crews was kind of calling him on that, like Titus was celebrating and Cruz is kind of pointing out, yeah, but you held the trunks, whatever. Another one. I don't really get the Titus brand thing. It's, I mean, it's mildly interesting for Titus. It's at least it feels like, all right, he's trying to do this like management thing or something. Because for a while there, he's just talking about the Titus brand, and everyone's just sitting there going, huh? So now it's like he wants to be a manager, maybe. I don't know for sure. I don't really know what this is doing for Kalisto and Cruz, though. We saw a shot of Alexa Bliss walking backstage and coming out of the commercial. It was time for the Bayley, This Is Your Life segment. Now, long time, Longtime Raw viewers are going to remember the Rock and Mick Foley "This Is Your Life" segment from back in the day, and it did huge numbers for WWE. This was not nearly as good as that, not even close. I saw people on Twitter kind of bringing up that, yeah, that wasn't very good to watch at the time either. Here's the difference. Those were two characters you cared about, and yeah, there were some cheesy parts to it, and it did go on. Those two really just went for it. They took their time, and as far as it took more time than I think they were scheduled to have, and all of that. And it was a fun segment. You cared about the characters. You weren't sure how Rock was going to react to what Mick Foley was doing. And it just that lovable, quirky Mick Foley character. Along with the oddball characters that they had there from Rock's supposed history. Yeah, it was corny, but with those characters, you could get away with it. This was the same kind of quirky, oddball characters. Bailey's fourth grade teacher, her first best friend, and then her first the guy she went on her first date with. And the teacher, I mean, the idea was that they were all just talking about how nice she was, but making it seem like she had some serious daddy issues, because like her fourth grade teacher claimed that Bailey always had to have her father in the room with her, or she would cry. And then the former boyfriend claiming that he went for a kiss, and when he opened his eyes, he noticed that it was Bailey's father in front of him, and he almost kissed him. And then the friend was down on Bailey because their friendship ended because she always wanted to go out and do things, but Bailey only wanted to spend time watching Raw and SmackDown and that sort of thing. And I'm not even doing it justice just how bad the acting was, how corny the whole thing was. You had the crowd chanting "What" at Bliss. Bliss doing a nice job, the best she could with making this work. She's just a very good talker. She's very good on the microphone, but there just wasn't much to this. And Bailey ended up running out, and the idea is that they're still trying to play up that Bailey is too nice to get extreme is the point of all of this. And I guess last week they didn't really do a good job. The broadcast team didn't. It seemed weird when Bailey had a chance to swing at Alexa with the kendo stick and didn't. And it was just like, well, was she supposed to get out of there sooner? What happened? Because it really wasn't put over that I remember. Again, I tend to zone those guys out. But I think I would have caught those guys really laying it on thick that, man, she had her chance and she didn't take it. Maybe what Alexa's saying is true. So that was kind of what they were going with here. But I just don't feel like it's that big of a question mark. It's not that compelling to me. It's all right, Bailey's been hit with a kendo stick shot a time or two. She's the one who wanted this match when Kurt Angle was willing to not book her in an Extreme Rules match. She jumped at it. She wanted her revenge, and so it just doesn't really ring true. And then you factor in they got way too cute trying to recreate Foley and Rock stuff from back in the day, and it just didn't work. It was just kind of a bad television, I guess is the best way to put it. Bailey ended up going for the kendo stick that was hanging from the pole in the corner, and but she ended up being stopped by Bliss, and then Bliss ended up reaching under a table that was in the ring, kind of set up with some Bailey mementos and things, and pulled out a kendo stick and struck Bailey with it, and Bailey sold that at ringside, and that's the way it ended. And it couldn't end soon enough. It just was I thought it was a poor segment. Didn't leave me anxious to see anything on Sunday. I mean, it's not like I'm dreading Bailey and Alexa's match by any means. It's not that. It's just this segment didn't push me closer to it. I just think they were in a whatever place they were in going into this show, as far as wherever you were on the anticipation level. I doubt this like raised your expectations. I could see where this would be a turnoff that really had some people lose interest in it. I can't say I fall into that category. I thought it was, it really didn't turn me off from the match, but it certainly didn't move me closer to being, more excited by it either. Enzo Amore was laid out backstage again. Big Cass was there, and he believed the Revival did it. But Kurt Angle claimed he saw them leave the building with his own eyes, because they couldn't return, I guess. I don't know. So again, could this be Cass is turning on his partner? Yes. Could it be the Revival did it? Yes. Could it be tied in with whatever Graves showed Angle? Maybe. I don't know. Sixth match. We've seen this one before. Austin Aries and Jack Gallagher beat Neville and TJP in 1240. The point here was for Ares to apply the last chancery and for Neville to submit. And so they're trying to sell you on, hey, look, the champion just tapped out to this. Cole was laying that on thick. Graves did try to defend Neville, saying that he may have been trying to save himself for Sunday, but Cole just kind of blew that off and went right back to raving about how Ares just showed the world that if he gets that move applied, that Neville will tap out, and then because it's a submission match, and then Ares will be the new champion. The broadcast team hyped the main event again, and then we ended up with the shot of Roman sitting in his locker room backstage. He stood up for an interview with Mike Rome, but quickly cut him off, and he said he doesn't care if they are best friends or worst enemies. There's not a man in the world who owns him, as Seth Rollins said. And he said that he would show Rollins and the rest of the world why he's the big dog and why it's his yard. Oof. You know, if you are a member, you heard me in .NET Weekly. I kind of echoed the comments in my live review. I'll do so again. I don't know what's likable about this character now. Wherever you fall on Roman Reigns, if you are a fan of his, if you go to a show and you cheer him, or you go to a show and you boo him, I'm curious for those who, like, at this point, go to the show and cheer him. And this isn't like a I hate Roman Reigns thing. What are you finding positive about this character? He comes out stone-faced. He doesn't really play to the crowd very much. His promos now are about being the big dog in his yard and this kind of thing. He doesn't smile anymore. You know, there's just nothing really positive about Roman Reigns anymore. And so maybe you find that, well, there's a cool factor to him, though, and that's fine. I'm asking honestly because I'm not sure what it is. They've tried to kind of toughen his image up, and I don't think it's to turn him heel. I think that they're toughening up the image, hoping that that's going to win over some of the anti-Roman folks. And I don't think it is. I think they're more likely to lose some of the pro-Roman fans with the approach they're taking with him, because there's not a Stone Cold Steve Austin swagger to him. There's not that cool factor to him with the way they're doing it. He just comes off like he's bitter and angry. I just don't think, and Austin did too to an extent, don't get me wrong, but there was a fun-loving nature to Steve Austin too, where there's just not with Roman Reigns. And so I at first it was like, oh, this is kind of cool. They're kind of shaking up the way they do things with Reigns. And the more it plays out, I'm just wondering, are they starting to alienate some of the fans who really liked him? Charlie Caruso caught up with Neville backstage and pointed out that he lost by submission for the first time since joining the Cruiserweight division, and she asked if that concerns him heading into the submission match. What's he supposed to say? He didn't say anything. He just kind of stormed off, and you could hear him throwing a fit off camera. The broadcast team recapped Goldust turning on R-Truth. We got another Shattered Dreams production video with old-school Goldust sitting in the director's chair. Are they going to have Marlena show up? Yeah, shot in the dark. Goldust labeled Truth a selfish man and said Golden Truth had reached its final crescendo. Even though Goldust was done, and they made it seem like he was being interrupted with an R-Truth Presents graphic. And he said that Goldust wants to play around with movies. Well, allow me to retort. He said movies allowed him to escape where he came from. And he talked about Shaft, Dolomite, and I think he said Julius Winfield. Aware of Shaft and Dolomite, can't say I know much about Julius Winfield. And then he said, I'm a bad mother, shut your mouth. And he said he will shut Goldust's mouth. He also had some Pulp Fiction lines in there too, kind of quoting the Samuel Jackson character from that movie. I mean, I'm more into the idea of old school Goldust being back than I am seeing R-Truth do much with this whole thing. So that's kind of my hope, is that Goldust gets to win this and move on and do other things. My fear is that this is it. You know, they turned him to feud with Truth, and they haven't really put much thought into it beyond that, but who knows. Then it was main event time. They showed Seth Rollins making his entrance. They went to a commercial, and they came back. Sasha Banks was advertised for 205 Live. And I got to say, you know, I don't think I mentioned it when she was out there for the mixed tag match or the men's match earlier in the show, the Cruiserweight match. It didn't feel as much like your typical Raw Cruiserweight match. There was a bit more star power there with Sasha being involved. And then you had Alicia at ringside too. So I don't know, there was just something about it. Even though the ropes were purple and everything, it just didn't have that, okay, here come the Cruiserweights and the crowd's just going to be deflated now. It didn't have that feel to it. And so, I mean, I don't know that it's going to make people turn out, you know, or tune in droves for 205 Live, but it helped that match. Then, and by the way, what does it say about 205 Live that one of the women who has been really misused, in my opinion. They haven't done a great job with Sasha. Feels like significant when advertised for 205 Live. Like, oh, they're adding some star power to the show. Man. Then Roman Reigns made his entrance. He was already jawing at Rollins from the ramp. And in the main event, I really got to say, I expected this to be more of an angle than a match. I thought this might be something where they had the other three guys run in, and it was just a big brawl to set up the five-way match for the pay-per-view. You know, somehow, maybe they give a good quality match, but then, at the end, I wasn't even, I thought they might even, like, fight for 2 minutes, and then out come the other three. But instead, as the match went on, I'm like, well, hey, if they're still going to go with that finish, or if they still play, if they're going to go with that finish, then fine. We've seen enough of this, and to at least they didn't give a cop out. Like, all right, it was 2 minutes, and out, here come the other three. No, they gave you plenty of time. Well, then they actually had a finish. They had Roman Reigns spear and pin Seth Rollins, and if you're a Rollins fan, you're like, why? Well, it's not like Seth Rollins has a whole lot of momentum right now anyway. There's not a whole lot going on there. Keep in mind that, hey, they could just as easily turn around and have Seth win on Sunday and go on to be the guy to face Brock Lesnar. That's kind of the compelling part of the pay-per-view for me, is that even though I can't say I'm sitting on pins and needles, I don't know. It's one of those I'm hoping to avoid the odds of the show because I think they'll probably give it away. But I would like to go into this kind of wondering, all right, who is going to win this match? I assume they're not going to win the WWE Championship when they face Lesnar, but it's still interesting that, okay, I can see this going in a few different directions. So who ultimately does win? I mean, Rollins has to be considered. I don't think Roman Reigns is a realistic candidate, only because I think they're saving that match of Lesnar and Reigns for WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, one of the bigger shows, probably Mania. But good match with Reigns and Rollins. Reigns was booed. But yeah, he had his supporters too. No, I was entertained by it. I thought they did a good job with this, and Rollins was competitive with Reigns, so it's not the end of the world that his character lost this match. Plenty of people have lost matches to Roman Reigns. It is a little odd going into the pay-per-view. It seems that we're supposed to buy Seth as a threat to win this and a threat to beat Lesnar, but he was beaten clean by Reigns. But it was competitive, so I'm okay with that. That was not high on my list of concerns as far as what we saw on Raw. The oddball storytelling with the Kurt Angle thing, Corey Graves, all of that was a complete mess. And I just, even though they gave us two matches that played, two, the triple threat and then the main event that played into the pay-per-view main event, I can't say I came away from this show more excited by the pay-per-view main event. It's odd. I think the best job they did was showing those graphics right when they announced the match, each guy as a potential opponent for Brock Lesnar. I thought that was a cool touch. And they just, I mean, it's tough when you have five guys involved, but they really haven't gotten me back there to that point where it's like, this is going to be great. And these matches were entertaining. But it was, it's like I know what a five-way is, and I just can't say that these matches move me closer to the pay-per-view main event either. And so it wasn't like a failure as far as being a go-home show is concerned, but I didn't think it was all that successful either. It was just kind of a average go-home show, but I think overall a mostly entertaining 3 hours with some oddball flaws mixed in. That is going to do it for today, everybody. I don't forget, members, I'll be by with Q&A most likely today, Tuesday, and if not, look for that on Wednesday, but it should be up on Tuesday. And if you are interested in membership to the ad-free version of the site, you will also hear the .NET Weekly audio show later this week and the audio review of WWE Extreme Rules that Jake Barnett and I will do, along with our television reviews and all sorts of things on the ad-free version of the site. Visit the main page of ProWrestling.net, click into the sign-up area, three different pricing options there for you. $7.50 gets you in the door for a month. You can also save money by signing up for either our six-month or annual option. That annual option knocks $2 off the price tag, bringing it down to an average of $5.50 per month. If you have any questions at all about membership, the sign-up process, anything like that, feel free to follow me on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet or shoot me an email at dotnetjason@gmail.com. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.